Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Letter 3 of the Love Letters of Abelard and Heloise. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by Icy Jumbo. The Love Letters of Abelard and Heloise, translated anonymously. Letter 3, Abelard to Heloise. Could I have imagined that a letter not written to yourself would fall into your hands, I had been more cautious not to have inserted anything in it which might awaken the memory of our past misfortunes. I described with boldness the series of my disgraces to a friend, in order to make him less sensible to a loss he had sustained. If by this well-meaning device I have disturbed you, I purpose now to dry up those tears which the sad description occasioned you to shed. I intend to mix my grief with yours, and pour out my heart before you. In short, to lay open before your eyes all my trouble, and the secret of my soul, which my vanity has hitherto made me conceal from the rest of the world, and which you now force from me, in spite of my resolutions to the contrary. It is true that in a sense of the afflictions which have befallen us, and observing that no change of our condition could be expected, that those prosperous days which had seduced us were now past, and there remained nothing but to erase from our minds, by painful endeavours, all marks and remembrances of them. I had wished to find in philosophy and religion a remedy for my disgrace. I searched out an asylum to secure me from love. I was come to the sad experiment of making vows to harden my heart. But what have I gained by this? If my passion has been put under a restraint, my thoughts yet run free. I promise myself that I will forget you, and yet cannot think of it without loving you. My love is not at all lessened by those reflections I make in order to free myself. The silence I am surrounded by makes me more sensible to its impressions, and while I am unemployed with any other things, this makes itself the business of my whole vacation. Till, after a multitude of useless endeavours, I begin to persuade myself that it is a superfluous trouble to strive to free myself, and that it is sufficient wisdom to conceal from all but you how confused and weak I am. I remove to a distance from your person with the intention of avoiding you as an enemy, and yet I incessantly seek for you in my mind. I recall your image in my memory, and in different disquietudes I betray and contradict myself. I hate you. I love you. Shame presses me on all sides. I am at this moment afraid I should seem more indifferent than you fair, and yet I am ashamed to discover my trouble. How weak are we in ourselves if we do not support ourselves on the cross of Christ? Shall we have so little courage, and shall that uncertainty of serving two masters which afflicts your heart affect mine too? You see the confusion I am in, how I blame myself and how I suffer. Religion commands me to pursue virtue, since I have nothing to hope for from love. But love still preserves its dominion over my fancies, and entertains itself with past pleasures. Memory supplies the place of a mistress. Piety and duty are not always the fruits of retirement. Even in deserts, when the dew of heaven falls not on us, we love what we ought no longer to love. The passions, stirred up by solitude, fill these regions of death and silence. It is very seldom that what ought to be is truly followed here, and that God only is loved and served. Had I known this before I instructed you better. You call me your master. It is true you were entrusted to my care. I saw you. I was earnest to teach you vain sciences. It cost you your innocence and me my liberty. Your uncle, who was fond of you, became my enemy and revenged himself on me. If now, having lost the power of satisfying my passion, I had also lost that of loving you, I should have some consolation. My enemies would have given me that tranquillity which Origen purchased with a crime. How miserable am I! I find myself much more guilty in my thoughts of you, even amidst my tears, than in possessing you when I was in full liberty. I continually think of you. I continually call to mind your tenderness. In this condition, O Lord, if I run to prostrate myself before your altar, if I beseech you to pity me, why does not the pure flame of the Spirit consume the sacrifice that is offered? Cannot this habit of penitence which I wear interest heaven to treat me more favourably? But heaven is still inexorable because my passion still lives in me. The fire is only covered over with deceitful ashes, and cannot be extinguished but by extraordinary grace. We deceive men, but nothing is hid from God. You tell me that it is for me you live under that veil which covers you. Why do you profane your vocation with such words? Why provoke a jealous God with a blasphemy? I hoped, after our separation, you would have changed your sentiments. I hoped, too, that God would have delivered me from the tumult of my senses. We commonly die to the affections of those we see no more, and they to ours. Absence is the tomb of love. But to me, absence is an unquiet remembrance of what I once loved, which continually torments me. I flattered myself that when I should see you no more, you would rest in my memory without troubling my mind, that Brittany and the sea would suggest other thoughts, that my fasts and studies would by degrees delete you from my heart. But in spite of severe fasts and redoubled studies, in spite of the distance of 300 miles which separates us, your image, as you describe yourself in your veil, appears to me and confounds all my resolutions. What means have I not used? I have armed my hands against myself. I have exhausted my strength in constant exercises. I comment upon St. Paul. I contend with Aristotle. In short, I do all I used to do before I loved you, but all in vain. Nothing can be successful that opposes you. Oh, do not add to my miseries by your constancy. Forget, if you can, your favours and that right which they claim over me. Allow me to be indifferent. I envy their happiness who have never loved. How quiet and easy are they! But the tide of pleasure has always a reflux of bitterness. I am but too much convinced now of this. But though I am no longer deceived by love, I am not cured. While my reason condemns it, my heart declares for it. I am deplorable that I have not the ability to free myself from a passion which so many circumstances, this place, my person and my disgraces tend to destroy. I yield without considering that a resistance would wipe out my past offences, and procure me in their stead both merit and repose. Why use your eloquence to reproach me for my flight and for my silence? Spare the recital of our assignations, and your constant exactness to them. Without calling up such disturbing thoughts, I have enough to suffer. What great advantages would philosophy give us over other men, if by studying it we could learn to govern our passions? What efforts, what relapses, what agitations do we undergo? And how long are we lost in this confusion, unable to exert our reason, to possess our souls, or to rule our affections? What a troublesome employment is love, and how valuable is virtue even upon consideration of our own ease! Recollect your extravagances of passion, guess at my distractions. Number up our cares, our griefs. throw these things out of the account, and let love have all the remaining tenderness and pleasure. How little is that! And yet for such shadows of enjoyments which at first appeared to us, are we so weak our whole lives that we cannot now help writing to each other, covered as we are with sackcloth and ashes. How much happier should we be if by our humiliation and tears we could make our repentance sure? The love of pleasure is not eradicated out of the soul, save by extraordinary efforts. It has so powerful an advocate in our breasts that we find it difficult to condemn it ourselves. What abhorrence can I be said to have of my sins if the objects of them are always amiable to me? How can I separate from the person I love the passion I should detest? Will the tears I shed be sufficient to render it odious to me? I know not how it happens. There is always a pleasure in weeping for a beloved object. It is difficult in our sorrow to distinguish penitence from love. The memory of the crime and the memory of the object which has charmed us are too nearly related to be immediately separated. And the love of God in its beginning does not wholly annihilate the love of the creature. But what excuses could I not find in you if the crime were excusable? Unprofitable honour, troublesome riches could never tempt me. But those charms, that beauty, that air, which I yet behold at this instant, have occasioned my fall. Your looks were the beginnings of my guilt. Your eyes, your discourse pierced my heart, and in spite of that ambition and glory which tried to make a defence, love was soon the master. God, in order to punish me, forsook me. You are no longer of the world. You have renounced it. I am a religious devoted to solitude. Shall we not take advantage of our condition? Would you destroy my piety in its infant state? Would you have me forsake the abbey into which I am but newly entered? Must I renounce my vows? I have made them in the presence of God. Whither shall I fly from his wrath should I violate them? Suffer me to seek ease in my duty, though difficult it is to procure it. I pass whole days and nights alone in this cloister without closing my eyes. My love burns fiercer amidst the happy indifference of those who surround me, and my heart is alike pierced with your sorrows and my own. Oh, what a loss have I sustained when I consider your constancy! What pleasures have I missed enjoying! I ought not to confess this weakness to you. I am sensible I commit a fault. If I could show more firmness of mind, I might provoke your resentment against me, and your anger might work that effect in you which your virtue could not. If in the world I published my weakness in love songs and verses, ought not the dark cells of this house at least to conceal that same weakness under an appearance of piety? Alas, I am still the same. Or if I avoid the evil, I cannot do the good. Duty, reason and decency, which upon other occasions have some power over me, are here useless. The gospel is a language I do not understand when it opposes my passion. Those vows I have taken before the altar are feeble when opposed to thoughts of you. Amidst so many voices which bid me do my duty, I hear and obey nothing but the secret cry of a desperate passion. Void of all relish for virtue, without concern for my condition or any application to my studies, I am continually present by my imagination where I ought not to be, and I find I have no power to correct myself. I feel a perpetual strife between inclination and duty. I find myself a distracted lover, unquiet in the midst of silence, and restless in the midst of peace. How shameful is such a condition! Regard me no more, I entreat you, as a founder or any great personage. Your praises ill agree with my many weaknesses. I am a miserable sinner, prostrate before my judge, and with my face pressed to the earth I mix my tears with the earth. Can you see me in this posture and solicit me to love you? Come, if you think fit, and in your holy habit thrust yourself between my God and me, and be a wall of separation. Come and force me from those sighs and thoughts and vows I owe to him alone. Assist the evil spirits, and be the instrument of their malice. what cannot you induce a heart to do whose weakness you so perfectly know? Nay, withdraw yourself, and contribute to my salvation. Suffer me to avoid destruction, I entreat you, by our former tender affection, and by our now common misfortune. I will always, to show none, I here release you from all your oaths and engagements. Be God's holy, to whom you are appropriated. I will never oppose so pious a design. How happy shall I be if I thus lose you? Then shall I indeed be a religious, and you a perfect example of an abbess. Make yourself amends by so glorious a choice. Make your virtue a spectacle worthy of men and angels. Be humble among your children, assiduous in your choir, exact in your discipline, diligent in your reading. Make even your recreations useful. Have you purchased your vocation at so light a rate that you should not turn it to the best advantage? Since you have permitted yourself to be abused by false doctrine and criminal instruction, resist not those good counsels which grace and religion inspire me with. I will confess to you that I have thought myself hitherto an abler master to instil vice than to teach virtue. My false eloquence has only set off false good. My heart, drunk with voluptuousness, could only suggest terms proper and moving to recommend that. The cup of sinners overflows with so enchanting a sweetness, and we are naturally so much inclined to taste it, that it needs only to be offered to us. On the other hand, the chalice of saints is filled with a bitter draught, and nature starts from it. And yet you reproach me with cowardice for giving it to you first. I willingly submit to these accusations. I cannot enough admire the readiness you showed to accept the religious habit. Bear therefore with courage the cross you so resolutely took up. Drink of the chalice of saints, even to the bottom, without turning your eyes with uncertainty upon me. Let me remove far from you, and obey the apostle who hath said, Fly! You entreat me to return under a pretence of devotion. Your earnestness in this point creates a suspicion in me, and makes me doubtful how to answer you. Should I commit an error here, my words would blush, if I may say so, after the history of our misfortunes. The Church is jealous of its honour, and commands that her children should be induced to the practice of virtue by virtuous means. When we approach God in a blameless manner, then we may with boldness invite others to him. But to forget Eloise, to see her no more, is what heaven demands of Abelard. And to expect nothing from Abelard, to forget him even as an idea, is what heaven enjoins on Eloise. To forget, in the case of love, is the most necessary penance, and the most difficult. It is easy to recount our faults. How many, through indiscretion, have made themselves a second pleasure of this, instead of confessing them with humility. The only way to return to God is by neglecting the creature we have adored, and adoring the God whom we have neglected. This may appear harsh, but it must be done if we would be saved. To make it more easy, consider why I pressed you to your vow before I took mine, and pardon my sincerity and the design I have of meriting your neglect and hatred if I conceal nothing from you. When I saw myself oppressed by my misfortune, I was furiously jealous, and regarded all men as my rivals. Love has more of distrust than assurance. I was apprehensive of many things because of my many defects, and being tormented with fear because of my own example, I imagined your heart so accustomed to love that it could not be long without entering on a new engagement. Jealousy can easily believe the most terrible things. I was desirous to make it impossible for me to doubt you. I was very urgent to persuade you that propriety demanded your withdrawal from the eyes of the world, that modesty and our friendship required it, and that your own safety obliged it. After such a revenge taken on me, you could expect to be secure nowhere but in a convent. I will do you justice. You were very easily persuaded. My jealousy secretly rejoiced in your innocent compliance. And yet, triumphant as I was, I yielded you up to God with an unwilling heart. I still kept my gift as much as was possible, and only parted with it in order to keep it out of the power of other men. I did not persuade you to religion out of any regard to your happiness, but condemned you to it like an enemy who destroys what he cannot carry off. And yet you heard my discourses with kindness. You sometimes interrupted me with tears, and pressed me to acquaint you with those convents I held in the highest esteem. What a comfort I felt in seeing you shut up! I was now at ease, and took a satisfaction in considering that you continued no longer in the world after my disgrace, and that you would return to it no more. But still I was doubtful. I imagined women were incapable of steadfast resolutions unless they were forced by the necessity of vows. I wanted those vows, and heaven itself for your security, that I might no longer distrust you. Ye holy mansions and impenetrable retreats, from what innumerable apprehensions have ye freed me! Religion and piety keep a strict guard round your grates and walls. What a haven of rest this is to a jealous mind! And with what impatience did I endeavour after it! I went every day trembling to exhort you to this sacrifice. I admired, without daring to mention it then, a brightness in your beauty which I had never observed before. Whether it was the bloom of a rising virtue, or an anticipation of the great loss I was to suffer, I was not curious in examining the cause, but only hastened your being professed. I engaged your prioress in my guilt by a criminal bribe with which I purchased the right of burying you. The professed of the house were alike bribed, and concealed from you, at my directions, all their scruples and disgusts. I omitted nothing, either little or great, and if you had escaped my snares, I myself would not have retired. I was resolved to follow you everywhere. The shadow of myself would always have pursued your steps, and continually have occasioned either your confusion or your fear, which would have been a sensible gratification to me. But, thanks to heaven, you resolved to take the vows. I accompanied you to the foot of the altar, and while you stretched out your hand to touch the sacred cloth, I heard you distinctly pronounce those fatal words that for ever separated you from man. Till then I thought your youth and beauty would foil my design and force your return to the world. Might not a small temptation have changed you? Is it possible to renounce oneself entirely at the age of 22? At an age which claims the utmost liberty, could you think the world no longer worth your regard? How much did I wrong you, and what weakness did I impute to you? You were in my imagination both light and inconstant. Would not a woman at the noise of the flames and the fall of Sodom involuntarily look back in pity on some person? I watched your eyes, your every movement, your air. I trembled at everything. You may call such self-interested conduct treachery, perfidy, murder. A love so like to hatred should provoke the utmost contempt and anger. It is fit you should know that the very moment when I was convinced of your being entirely devoted to me, when I saw you were infinitely worthy of all my love, I imagined I could love you no more. I thought it time to leave off giving you marks of my affection, and I considered that by your holy espousals you were now the peculiar care of heaven, and no longer a charge on me as my wife. My jealousy seemed to be extinguished. When God only is our rival, we have nothing to fear, and being in greater tranquillity than ever before, I even dared to pray to him to take you away from my eyes. But it was not a time to make rash prayers, and my faith did not warrant them being heard. Necessity and despair were at the root of my proceedings, and thus I offered an insult to heaven rather than a sacrifice. God rejected my offering and my prayer, and continued my punishment by suffering me to continue my love. Thus I bear alike the guilt of your vows and of the passion that preceded them, and must be tormented all the days of my life. If God spoke to your heart as to that of a religious whose innocence had first asked him for favours, I should have matter of comfort. But to see both of us the victims of a guilty love, to see this love insult us in our very habits and spoil our devotions fills me with horror and trembling. Is this a state of reprobation, or are these the consequences of a long drunkenness in profane love? We cannot say love is a poison and a drunkenness till we are illuminated by grace. In the meantime, it is an evil we dote on. When we are under such a mistake, the knowledge of our misery is the first step towards amendment. Who does not know that 'tis for the glory of God to find no other reason in man for his mercy than man's very weakness? When he has shown us this weakness, and we have bewailed it, he is ready to put forth his omnipotence and assist us. Let us say for our comfort that what we suffer is of those terrible temptations which have sometimes disturbed the vocations of the most holy. God can grant his presence to men in order to soften their calamities whenever he shall think fit. It was his pleasure, when you took the veil, to draw you to him by his grace. I saw your eyes, when you spoke your last farewell, fixed upon the cross. It was more than 6 months before you wrote me a letter, nor during all that time did I receive a message from you. I admired this silence, which I durst not blame, but could not imitate. I wrote to you, and you returned me no answer. Your heart was then shut, but this garden of the spouse is now opened. He is withdrawn from it, and has left you alone. By removing from you, he has made a trial of you. Call him back, and strive to regain him. We must have the assistance of God, that we may break our chains. We are too deeply in love to free ourselves. Our follies have penetrated into the sacred places. Our amours have been a scandal to the whole kingdom. They are read and admired. Love which produced them has caused them to be described. We shall be a consolation to the failings of youth for ever. Those who offend after us will think themselves less guilty. We are criminals whose repentance is late. Oh, let it be sincere. Let us repair as far as is possible the evils we have done, and let France, which has been the witness of our crimes, be amazed at our repentance. Let us confound all who would imitate our guilt. Let us take the side of God against ourselves, and by so doing prevent his judgment. Our former lapses require tears, shame, and sorrow to expiate them. Let us offer up these sacrifices from our hearts. Let us blush, and let us weep. If in these feeble beginnings, O Lord, our hearts are not entirely thine, let them at least feel that they ought to be so. Deliver yourself, Eloise, from the shameful remains of a passion which has taken too deep root. Remember that the least thought for any other than God is an adultery. If you could see me here with my meagre face and melancholy air, surrounded with numbers of persecuting monks, who are alarmed at my reputation for learning and offended at my lean visage, as if I threatened them with a reformation, what would you say of my base sighs and of those unprofitable tears which deceive these credulous men? Alas, I am humbled under love and not under the cross. Pity me and free yourself. If your vocation be, as you say, my work, deprive me not of the merit of it by your continual inquietudes. Tell me you will be true to the habit which covers you by an inward retirement. Fear God, that you may be delivered from your frailties. Love him, that you may advance in virtue. Be not restless in the cloister, for it is the peace of saints. Embrace your bands. They are the chains of Christ Jesus. He will lighten them and bear them with you, if you will but accept them with humility. Without growing severe to a passion that still possesses you, learn from your own misery to succour your weak sisters. Pity them upon consideration of your own faults, and if any thoughts too natural should importune you, fly to the foot of the cross, and there beg for mercy. There are wounds open for healing. Lament them before the dying deity. At the head of a religious society, be not a slave, and having rule over queens, begin to govern yourself. Blush at the least revolt of your senses. remember that even at the foot of the altar we often sacrifice to lying spirits, and that no incense can be more agreeable to them than the earthly passion that still burns in the heart of a religious. If, during your abode in the world, your soul has acquired a habit of loving, feel it now no more save for Jesus Christ. Repent of all the moments of your life which you have wasted in the world and on pleasure. Demand them of me. 'Tis a robbery of which I am guilty. Take courage and boldly reproach me with it. I have been indeed your master, but it was only to teach sin. You call me your father. Before I had any claim to the title, I deserved that of parricide. I am your brother, but it is the affinity of sin that brings me that distinction. I am called your husband, but it is after a public scandal. If you have abused the sanctity of so many holy terms in the superscription of your letter to do me honour and flatter your own passion, blot them out and replace them with those of murderer, villain, and enemy, who has conspired against your honour, troubled your quiet, and betrayed your innocence. You would have perished through my means but for an extraordinary act of grace which, that you might be saved, has thrown me down in the middle of my course. This is the thought you ought to have of a fugitive who desires to deprive you of the hope of ever seeing him again. But when love has once been sincere, how difficult it is to determine to love no more. It is a thousand times more easy to renounce the world than love. I hate this deceitful, faithless world. I think no more of it, but my wandering heart still eternally seeks you, and is filled with anguish at having lost you, in spite of all the powers of my reason. In the meantime, though I should be so cowardly as to retract what you have read, do not suffer me to offer myself to your thoughts, save in this last fashion. Remember, my last worldly endeavours were to seduce your heart. You perished by my means, and I with you. The same waves swallowed us up. We waited for death with indifference, and the same death had carried us headlong to the same punishments. But Providence warded off the blow, and our shipwreck has thrown us into a haven. There are some whom God saves by suffering. Let my salvation be the fruit of your prayers. Let me owe it to your tears and your exemplary holiness. Though my heart, Lord, be filled with the love of thy creature, thy hand can, when it pleases, empty me of all love save for thee. To love Eloise truly is to leave her to that quiet which retirement and virtue afford. I have resolved it. This letter shall be my last fault. Adieu. If I die here, I will give orders that my body be carried to the house of the Paraclete. You shall see me in that condition to demand tears from you, for it will be too late. Weep rather for me now, and extinguish the fire which burns me. You shall see me in order that your piety may be strengthened by horror of this carcass, and my death be eloquent to tell you what you brave when you love a man. I hope you will be willing, when you have finished this mortal life, to be buried near me. Your cold ashes need then fear nothing, and my tomb shall be the more rich and renowned. End of letter 3.
Letter 4 of The Love Letters of Abelard and Eloise. Translated by Anonymous. Edited by Israel Gallance and Honor Morton. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Laura Koskinen. The Love Letters of Abelard and Eloise. Letter 4. Eloise to Abelard. To Abelard, her well-beloved in Christ Jesus, from Eloise, his well-beloved in the same Christ Jesus. I read the letter I received from you with great impatience. In spite of all my misfortunes, I hoped to find nothing in it besides arguments of comfort. but how ingenuous are lovers in tormenting themselves! Judge of the exquisite sensibility and force of my love, by that which causes the grief of my soul. I was disturbed at the superscription of your letter. Why did you place the name of Eloise before that of Abelard? What means this cruel and unjust distinction? It was your name only, the name of a father and a husband, which my eager eyes sought for. I did not look for my own, which I would, if possible, forget, for it is the cause of all your misfortunes. The rules of decorum and your position as master and director over me opposed that ceremony in addressing me, and love commanded you to banish it. Alas, you know all this but too well. Did you address me thus before cruel fortune had ruined my happiness? I see your heart has forsaken me, and you have made greater advances in the way of devotion than I could wish. Alas, I am too weak to follow you. Condescend at least to stay for me and animate me with your advice. Can you have the cruelty to abandon me? The fear of this stabs my heart. The fearful presages you make at the end of your letter, those terrible images you draw of your death, quite distract me. Cruel Abelard, you ought to have stopped my tears, and you make them flow. You ought to have quelled the turmoil of my heart, and you throw me into greater disorder. You desire that after your death I should take care of your ashes and pay them the last duties. Alas, in what temper did you conceive these mournful ideas, and how could you describe them to me? Did not the dread of causing my immediate death make the pen drop from your hand? You did not reflect, I suppose, upon all those torments to which you were going to deliver me. Heaven, severe as it has been to me, is not so insensible as to permit me to live one moment after you. Life without Abelard were an insupportable punishment, and death a most exquisite happiness if by that means I could be united to him. If heaven but hearken to my continual cry, your days will be prolonged, and you will bury me. Is it not your part to prepare me by powerful exhortation against that great crisis which shakes the most resolute and stable minds? Is it not your part to receive my last sighs, superintend my funeral, and give an account of my acts and my faith? Who but you can recommend us worthily to God, and by the fervor and merit of your prayers, conduct those souls to him which you have joined to his worship by solemn vows? We expect those pious offices from your paternal charity. After this you will be free from those disquietudes which now molest you, and you will quit life with ease whenever it shall please God to call you away. You may follow us content with what you have done, and in a full assurance of our happiness. But till then, write me no more such terrible things, for we are already sufficiently miserable, nor need to have our sorrows aggravated. Our life here is but a languishing death. Would you hasten it? Our present disgraces are sufficient to employ our thoughts continually, and shall we seek in the future new reasons for fear? How void of reason are men, said Seneca, to make distant evils present by reflections, and to take pains before death to lose all the joys of life. When you have finished your course here below, you said that it is your desire that your body be borne to the house of the Paraclete, to the intent that being always before my eyes, you may be ever present in my mind. Can you think that the traces you have drawn on my heart can ever be worn out, or that any length of time can obliterate the memory we hold here of your benefits? And what time shall I find for those prayers you speak of? Alas, I shall then be filled with other cares, for so heavy a misfortune would leave me no moment's quiet. Can my feeble reason resist such powerful assaults? When I am distracted and raving, if I dare say it, even against heaven itself. I shall not soften it by my cries, but rather provoke it by my reproaches. How should I pray, or how bear up against my grief? I should be more eager to follow you than to pay you the sad ceremonies of a funeral. It is for you, for Abelard, that I have resolved to live, and if you are ravished from me, I can make no use of my miserable days. Alas, what lamentations should I make if heaven, by a cruel pity, preserved me for that moment? When I but think of this last separation, I feel all the pangs of death. What should I be then, if I should see this dreadful hour? Forbear, therefore, to infuse into my mind such mournful thoughts, if not for love, at least for pity. You desire me to give myself up to my duty, and to be holy God's, to whom I am consecrated. How can I do that, when you frighten me with apprehensions that continually possess my mind both night and day? When an evil threatens us, and it is impossible to ward it off, why do we give up ourselves to the unprofitable fear of it, which is yet even more tormenting than the evil itself? What have I hope for after the loss of you? What can confine me to earth, when death shall have taken away from me all that was dear on it? I have renounced with difficulty all the charms of life, preserving only my love, and the secret pleasure of thinking incessantly of you, and hearing that you live. And yet, alas, you do not live for me, and dare not flatter myself even with the hope that I shall ever see you again. This is the greatest of my afflictions. Merciless fortune, hadst thou not persecuted me enough? Thou dost not give me any respite. Thou hast exhausted all thy vengeance upon me, and reserved nothing whereby thou mayest appear terrible to others. Thou hast wearied thyself in tormenting me, and others have nothing to fear from thy anger. But what use to longer arm thyself against me? The wounds I have already received leave no room for others, unless thou desirest to kill me. Or dost thou fear, amidst the numerous torments heaped on me, dost thou fear that such a final stroke would deliver me from all other ills? Therefore thou preservest me from death in order to make me die daily. Dear Abelard, pity my despair. Was ever any being so miserable? The higher you raised me above other women, who envied me your love, the more sensible am I now of the loss of your heart. I was exalted to the top of happiness, only that I might have the more terrible fall. Nothing could be compared to my pleasures, and now nothing can equal my misery. My joys once raised the envy of my rivals. My present wretchedness calls forth the compassion of all that see me. My fortune has been always in extremes. She has loaded me with the greatest favors, and then heaped me with the greatest afflictions. Ingenuous in tormenting me, she has made the memory of the joys I have lost an inexhaustible spring of tears. Love, which being posset was her most delightful gift, on being taken away is an untold sorrow. In short, her malice has entirely succeeded, and I find my present afflictions proportionately bitter, as the transports which charmed me were sweet. But what aggravates my sufferings yet more is, that we began to be miserable at a time when we seemed the least to deserve it. While we gave ourselves up to the enjoyment of a guilty love, nothing opposed our pleasures. But scarcely had we retrenched our passion, and taken refuge in matrimony, then the wrath of heaven fell on us with all its weight. And how barbarous was your punishment! Ah, what right had a cruel uncle over us! We were joined to each other even before the altar. and this should have protected us from the rage of our enemies. Besides, we were separated. You were busy with your lectures, and instructed a learned audience in mysteries which the greatest geniuses before you could not penetrate. And I, in obedience to you, retired to a cloister. I there spent whole days in thinking of you, and sometimes meditating on holy lessons, to which I endeavoured to apply myself. At this very juncture punishment fell upon us, and you, who were least guilty, became the object of the whole vengeance of a barbarous man. But why should I rave at Fulbert? I, wretched I, have ruined you, and have been the cause of all your misfortunes. How dangerous it is for a great man to suffer himself to be moved by our sex! He ought from his infancy to be inured to insensibility of heart against all our charms. Hearken, my son, said formerly the wisest of men, attend and keep my instructions. If a beautiful woman by her looks endeavour to entice thee, permit not thyself to be overcome by a corrupt inclination. Reject the poison she offers, and follow not the paths she directs. Her house is the gate of destruction and death. I have long examined things, and have found that death is less dangerous than beauty. It is the shipwreck of liberty, a fatal snare, from which it is impossible ever to get free. It was a woman who threw down the first man from the glorious position in which heaven had placed him. She, who was created to partake of his happiness, was the sole cause of his ruin. How bright had been the glory of Samson, if his heart had been proof against the charms of Delilah, as against the weapons of the Philistines! A woman disarmed and betrayed he who had been a conqueror of armies. He saw himself delivered into the hands of his enemies. He was deprived of his eyes, those inlets of love into the soul. Distracted and despairing he died, without any consolation save that of including his enemies in his ruin. Solomon, that he might please women, forsook pleasing God. That king whose wisdom princes came from all parts to admire, he whom God had chosen to build the temple, abandoned the worship of the very altars he had raised, and proceeded to such a pitch of folly as even to burn incense to idols. Job had no enemy more cruel than his wife. What temptations did he not bear? The evil spirit who had declared himself his persecutor employed a woman as an instrument to shake his constancy. And the same evil spirit made Eloise an instrument to ruin Abelard. All the poor comfort I have is that I am not the voluntary cause of your misfortunes. I have not betrayed you, but my constancy and love have been destructive to you. If I have committed a crime in loving you so constantly, I cannot repent it. I have endeavoured to please you even at the expense of my virtue, and therefore deserve the pains I feel. As soon as I was persuaded of your love, I delayed scarce a moment in yielding to your protestations. To be beloved by Abelard was in my esteem so great a glory, and I so impatiently desired it, not to believe in it immediately. I aimed at nothing but convincing you of my utmost passion. I made no use of those defences of disdain and honour, those enemies of pleasure, which tyrannize over our sex made in me but a weak and unprofitable resistance. I sacrificed all to my love, and I forced my duty to give place to the ambition of making happy the most famous and learned person of the age. If any consideration had been able to stop me, it would have been without doubt my love. I feared lest, having nothing further to offer you, your passion might become languid, and you might seek for new pleasures in another conquest. but it was easy for you to cure me of a suspicion so opposite to my own inclination. I ought to have foreseen other more certain evils, and to have considered that the idea of lost enjoyments would be the trouble of my whole life. How happy should I be could I wash out with my tears the memory of those pleasures which I yet think of with delight. At least I will try, by strong endeavour, to smother in my heart those desires to which the frailty of my nature gives birth. I will exercise on myself such torments as those you have to suffer from the rage of your enemies. I will endeavour by this means to satisfy you at least, if I cannot appease an angry God. For to show you to what a deplorable condition I am reduced, and how far my repentance is from being complete, I dare even accuse heaven at this moment of cruelty for delivering you over to the snares prepared for you. My repinings can only kindle divine wrath, when I should be seeking for mercy. In order to expiate a crime, it is not sufficient to bear the punishment. Whatever we suffer is of no avail if the passion still continues, and the heart is filled with the same desire. It is an easy matter to confess a weakness, and inflict on ourselves some punishment, but it needs perfect power over our nature to extinguish the memory of pleasures, which by a loved habitude have gained possession of our minds. How many persons do we see who make an outward confession of their faults, yet, far from being in distress about them, take a new pleasure in relating them? Contrition of the heart ought to accompany the confession of the mouth, yet this very rarely happens. I, who have experienced so many pleasures in loving you, feel, in spite of myself, that I cannot repent them, nor forbear through memory to enjoy them over again. Whatever efforts I use, on whatever side I turn, the sweet thought still pursues me, and every object brings to my mind what it is my duty to forget. During the quiet night, when my heart ought to be still in that sleep which suspends the greatest cares, I cannot avoid the illusions of my heart. I dream I am still with my dear Abelard. I see him. I speak to him and hear him answer. Charmed with each other, we forsake our studies and give ourselves up to love. Sometimes, too, I seem to struggle with your enemies. I oppose their fury. I break into piteous cries, and in a moment I awake in tears. Even into holy places before the altar, I carry the memory of our love. And far from lamenting for having been seduced by pleasures, I sigh for having lost them. I remember, for nothing is forgot by lovers, the time and place in which you first declared your passion and swore you would love me till death. Your words, your oaths, are deeply graven in my heart. My stammering speech betrays to all the disorder of my mind. My sighs discover me, and your name is ever on my lips. O Lord, when I am thus afflicted, why dost not thou pity my weakness and strengthen me with thy grace? You are happy, Abelard, in that grace is given you, and your misfortune has been the occasion of your finding rest. The punishment of your body has cured the deadly wounds of your soul. The tempest has driven you into the haven. God, who seemed to deal heavily with you, sought only to help you. He was a father chastising, and not an enemy revenging. A wise physician, putting you to some pain in order to preserve your life. I am a thousand times more to be pitied than you, for I have still a thousand passions to fight. I must resist those fires which love kindles in a young heart. Our sex is nothing but weakness, and I have the greater difficulty in defending myself, because the enemy that attacks me pleases me. I dote on the danger which threatens. How, then, can I avoid yielding? In the midst of these struggles I try, at least, to conceal my weakness from those you have entrusted to my care. All who are about me admire my virtue, but could their eyes penetrate into my heart, what would they not discover? My passions there are in rebellion. I preside over others, but cannot rule myself. I have a false covering, and this seeming virtue is a real vice. Men judge me praiseworthy, but I am guilty before God. From his all-seeing eye nothing is hid, and he views through all their windings the secrets of the heart. I cannot escape his discovery, and yet it means great effort to me merely to maintain this appearance of virtue. So surely this troublesome hypocrisy is in some sort commendable. I give no scandal to the world, which is so easy to take bad impressions. I do not shake the virtue of those feeble ones who are under my rule. With my heart, full of the love of man, I teach them at least to love only God. Charmed with the pomp of worldly pleasures, I endeavour to show them that they are all vanity and deceit. I have just strength enough to conceal from them my longings, and I look upon that as a great effect of grace. If it is not enough to make me embrace virtue, 'tis enough to keep me from committing sin. And yet it is in vain to try and separate these two things. They must be guilty who are not righteous, and they depart from virtue who delay to approach it. Besides, we ought to have no other motive than the love of God. Alas, what can I then hope for? I own, to my confusion, I fear more to offend a man than to provoke God, and I study less to please him than to please you. Yes, it was your command only, and not a sincere vocation, which sent me into these cloisters. I sought to give you ease, and not to sanctify myself. How unhappy am I! I tear myself from all that pleases me. I bury myself alive. I exercise myself with the most rigid fastings, and all those severities the cruel laws impose on us. I feed myself with tears and sorrows, and notwithstanding this I merit nothing by my penance. My false piety has long deceived you as well as others. You have thought me at peace when I was more disturbed than ever. You persuaded yourself I was wholly devoted to my duty, yet I had no business but love. Under this mistake you desire my prayers. Alas, I need yours. Do not presume upon my virtue and my care. I am wavering. Fix me by your advice. I am feeble. Sustain and guide me by your counsel. What occasion had you to praise me? Praise is often hurtful for those on whom it is bestowed. A secret vanity springs up in the heart, blinds us, and conceals from us the wounds that are half-healed. A seducer flatters us, and at the same time destroys us. A sincere friend disguises nothing from us, and far from passing a light hand over the wound, makes us feel it the more intensely by applying remedies. Why do you not deal after this manner with me? Will you be esteemed a base, dangerous flatterer? Or if you chance to see anything commendable in me, have you no fear that vanity, which is so natural to all women, should quite efface it? But let us not judge of virtue by outward appearances, for then the reprobate as well as the elect may lay claim to it. An artful impostor may by his address gain more admiration than is given to the zeal of a saint. The heart of man is a labyrinth whose windings are very difficult to discover. The praises you give me are the more dangerous because I love the person who bestows them. The more I desire to please you, the readier am I to believe the merit you attribute to me. Ah, think rather how to nerve my weakness by wholesome remonstrances. Be rather fearful than confident of my salvation. Say our virtue is founded upon weakness, and that they only will be crowned who have fought with the greatest difficulties. But I seek not the crown which is the reward of victory. I am content if I can avoid danger. It is easier to keep out of the way than to win a battle. There are several degrees in glory, and I am not ambitious of the highest. I leave them to those of greater courage, who have often been victorious. I seek not to conquer, for fear I should be overcome. Happiness enough for me to escape shipwreck, and at last reach port. Heaven commands me to renounce my fatal passion for you, but oh, my heart will never be able to consent to it. Adieu. End of letter 4. Letter 5 of the Love Letters of Abelard and Eloise. Translated by Anonymous. Edited by Israel Gallants. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Laura Koskinen. Letter 5. Eloise to Abelard. Dear Abelard, you expect, perhaps, that I should accuse you of negligence. You have not answered my last letter, and, thanks to heaven, in the condition I am now in, it is a relief to me that you show so much insensibility for the passion which I betrayed. At last, Abelard, you have lost Eloise for ever. Notwithstanding all the oaths I made to think of nothing but you, and to be entertained by nothing but you, I have banished you from my thoughts. I have forgot you. Thou charming idea of a lover I once adored, thou wilt be no more my happiness. Dear image of Abelard, thou wilt no longer follow me, no longer shall I remember thee. O celebrity and merit of that man who, in spite of his enemies, is the wonder of the age! O enchanting pleasures to which Eloise resigned herself, you have been my tormentors. I confess my inconstancy, Abelard, without a blush. Let my infidelity teach the world that there is no depending on the promises of women. We are all subject to change. This troubles you, Abelard. This news without surprises you. You never imagined Eloise could be inconstant. She was prejudiced by such a strong inclination towards you that you cannot conceive how time could alter it. But be undeceived. I am going to disclose to you my falseness, though, instead of reproaching me, I persuade myself you will shed tears of joy. When I tell you what rival hath ravished my heart from you, you will praise my inconstancy, and pray this rival to fix it. By this you will know that 'tis God alone that takes Eloise from you. Yes, my dear Abelard, he gives my mind that tranquillity which a vivid remembrance of our misfortunes formerly forbade. Just heaven, what other rival could take me from you? Could you imagine it possible for a mere human to blot you from my heart? Could you think me guilty of sacrificing the virtuous and learned Abelard to any other but God? No, I believe you have done me justice on this point. I doubt not you are eager to learn what means God used to accomplish so great an end. I will tell you, that you may wonder at the secret ways of Providence. Some few days after you sent me your last letter, I fell dangerously ill. The physicians gave me over, and I expected certain death. Then it was that my passion, which always before seemed innocent, grew criminal in my eyes. My memory represented faithfully to me all the past actions of my life, and I confess to you pain for our love was the only pain I felt. Death, which till then I had only viewed from a distance, now presented itself to me as it appears to sinners. I began to dread the wrath of God, now I was near experiencing it, and I repented that I had not better used the means of grace. Those tender letters I wrote to you, those fond conversations I have had with you, give me as much pain now as they had formerly given pleasure. Ah, miserable Eloise, I said, if it is a crime to give oneself up to such transports, and if, after this life is ended, punishment certainly follows them, why didst thou not resist such dangerous temptations? Think on the tortures prepared for thee. Consider with terror the store of torments, and recollect, at the same time, those pleasures which thy deluded soul thought so entrancing. Ah, dost thou not despair for having rioted in such false pleasures? In short, Abelard, imagine all the remorse of mind I suffered, and you will not be astonished at my change. Solitude is insupportable to the uneasy mind. Its troubles increase in the midst of silence, and retirement heightens them. Since I have been shut up in these walls, I have done nothing but weep our misfortunes. This cloister has resounded with my cries, and, like a wretch condemned to eternal slavery, I have worn out my days with grief. Instead of fulfilling God's merciful design towards me, I have offended against Him. I have looked upon this sacred refuge as a frightful prison, and have borne with unwillingness the yoke of the Lord. Instead of purifying myself with a life of penitence, I have confirmed my condemnation. What a fatal mistake! But, Abelard, I have torn off the bandage which blinded me, and if I dare rely upon my own feelings, I have now made myself worthy of your esteem. You are to me no more the loving Abelard, who constantly sought private conversations with me by deceiving the vigilance of our observers. Our misfortunes gave you a horror of vice, and you instantly consecrated the rest of your days to virtue, and seemed to submit willingly to the necessity. I, indeed, more tender than you, and more sensible to pleasure, bore misfortune with extreme impatience. And you have heard my exclaimings against your enemies. You have seen my resentment in my late letters. It was this, doubtless, which deprived me of the esteem of my Abelard. You were alarmed at my repinings, and, if the truth be told, despaired of my salvation. You could not foresee that Eloise would conquer so reigning a passion. But you were mistaken, Abelard. My weakness, when supported by grace, has not hindered me from winning a complete victory. Restore me, then, to your esteem. Your own piety should solicit you to this. But what secret trouble rises in my soul? What unthought-of emotion now rises to oppose the resolution I have formed to sigh no more for Abelard? Just heaven, have I not triumphed over my love? Unhappy Eloise, as long as thou drawest a breath, it is decreed thou must love Abelard. Weep, unfortunate wretch, for thou never hadst a more just occasion. I ought to die of grief. Grace had overtaken me, and I had promised to be faithful to it. But now am I perjured once more, and even grace is sacrificed to Abelard. This sacrilege fills up the measure of my iniquity. After this, how can I hope that God will open to me the treasure of his mercy, for I have tired out his forgiveness? I began to offend him from the first moment I saw Abelard. An unhappy sympathy engaged us both in a guilty love, and God raised us up an enemy to separate us. I lament the misfortune which lighted upon us, and I adore the cause. Ah, I ought rather to regard this misfortune as the gift of heaven, which disapproved of our engagement and parted us, and I ought to apply myself to extirpate my passion. How much better it were to forget entirely the object of it than to preserve a memory so fatal to my peace and salvation? Great God, shall Abelard possess my thoughts for ever? Can I never free myself from the chains of love? But perhaps I am unreasonably afraid. Virtue directs all my acts, and they are all subject to grace. Therefore, fear not, Abelard. I have no longer those sentiments which, being described in my letters, have occasioned you so much trouble. I will no more endeavour, by the relation of those pleasures our passion gave us, to awaken any guilty fondness you may yet feel for me. I free you from all your oaths. Forget the titles of lover and husband, and keep only that of father. I expect no more from you than tender protestations, and those letters so proper to feed the flame of love. I demand nothing of you but spiritual advice and wholesome discipline. The path of holiness, however thorny it be, will yet appear agreeable to me if I may but walk in your footsteps. You will always find me ready to follow you. I shall read with more pleasure the letters in which you shall describe the advantages of virtue than ever I did those in which you so artfully instilled the poison of passion. You cannot now be silent without a crime. When I was possessed with so violent a love, and pressed you so earnestly to write to me, how many letters did I send you before I could obtain one from you? You denied me in my misery the only comfort which was left me, because you thought it pernicious. You endeavored by severities to force me to forget you, nor do I blame you. But now you have nothing to fear. This fortunate illness, with which Providence has chastised me for my good, has done what all human efforts and your cruelty in vain attempted. I see now the vanity of that happiness we had set our hearts upon, as if it were eternal. What fears, what distress, have we not suffered for it? No, Lord, there is no pleasure upon earth but that which virtue gives. The heart, amidst all worldly delights, feels a sting. It is uneasy and restless until fixed on thee. What have I not suffered, Abelard, whilst I kept alive in my retirement those fires which ruined me in the world? I saw with hatred the walls that surrounded me. The hours seemed as long as years. I repented a thousand times that I had buried myself here. But since grace has opened my eyes, all the scene is changed. Solitude looks charming, and the peace of the place enters my very heart. In the satisfaction of doing my duty, I feel a delight above all that riches, pomp, or sensuality could afford. My quiet has indeed cost me dear, for I have bought it at the price of my love. I have offered a violent sacrifice I thought beyond my power. But if I have torn you from my heart, be not jealous. God, who ought always to have possessed it, reigns there in your stead. be content with having a place in my mind, which you shall never lose. I shall always take a secret pleasure in thinking of you, and esteem it a glory to obey those rules you shall give me. This very moment I receive a letter from you. I will read it and answer it immediately. You shall see by my promptitude in writing to you that you are always dear to me. You very obligingly reproach me for delay in writing you any news. My illness must excuse that. I omit no opportunities of giving you marks of my remembrance. I thank you for the uneasiness you say my silence caused you, and the kind fears you express concerning my health. Yours, you tell me, is but weakly, and you thought lately you should have died. With what indifference, cruel man, do you tell me a thing so certain to afflict me? I told you in my former letter how unhappy I should be if you died, and if you love me, you will moderate the rigors of your austere life. I represented to you the occasion I had for your advice, and consequently the reason there was you should take care of yourself. But I will not tire you with repetitions. You desire us not to forget you in our prayers. Ah, dear Abelard, you may depend upon the zeal of this society. It is devoted to you, and you cannot justly fear its forgetfulness. You are our father, and we are your children. You are our guide, and we resign ourselves to your direction with full assurance in your piety. You command, we obey. We faithfully execute what you have prudently ordered. We impose no penance on ourselves but what you recommend, lest we should rather follow an indiscreet zeal than solid virtue. In a word, nothing is thought right but what has Abelard's approbation. You tell me one thing that perplexes me, that you have heard that some of our sisters are bad examples, and that they are generally not strict enough. Ought this to seem strange to you, who know how monasteries are filled nowadays? Do fathers consult the inclination of their children when they settle them? Are not interest and policy their only rules? This is the reason that monasteries are often filled with those who are a scandal to them. But I conjure you to tell me what are the irregularities you have heard of, and to show me the proper remedy for them. I have not yet observed any looseness. When I have, I will take due care. I walk my rounds every night, and make those I catch abroad return to their chambers, for I remember all the adventures that happened in the monasteries near Paris. You end your letter with a general deploring of your unhappiness, and wish for death to end a weary life. Is it possible so great a genius as you cannot rise above your misfortunes? What would the world say should they read the letters you send me? Would they consider the noble motive of your retirement, or not rather think you had shut yourself up merely to lament your woes? What would your young students say, who come so far to hear you, and prefer your severe lectures to the ease of a worldly life, if they should discover you secretly a slave to your passions, and the victim of those weaknesses from which your rule secures them? This Abelard they so much admire, this great leader, would lose his fame and become the sport of his pupils. If these reasons are not sufficient to give you constancy in your misfortune, cast your eyes upon me, and admire the resolution with which I shut myself up at your request. I was young when we were separated, and, if I dare believe what you were always telling me, worthy of any man's affections. If I had loved nothing in Abelard but sensual pleasure, other men might have comforted me upon my loss of him. You know what I have done. Excuse me, therefore, from repeating it. Think of those assurances I gave you of loving you still with the utmost tenderness. I dried your tears with kisses, and because you were less powerful, I became less reserved. Ah, if you had loved with delicacy the oaths I made, the transports I indulged, the caresses I gave, would surely have comforted you. Had you seen me grow by degrees indifferent to you, you might have had reason to despair. But you never received greater tokens of my affection than after you felt misfortune. Let me see no more in your letters, dear Abelard, such murmurs against fate. You are not the only one who has felt her blows, and you ought to forget her outrages. What a shame it is that a philosopher cannot accept what might befall any man. Govern yourself by my example. I was born with violent passions. I daily strive with tender emotions, and glory in triumphing and subjecting them to reason. Must a weak mind fortify one that is so much superior? But I am carried away. Is it thus I write to my dear Abelard, he who practices all those virtues he preaches? If you complain of fortune, it is not so much that you feel her strokes, as that you try to show your enemies how much to blame they are in attempting to hurt you. Leave them, Abelard, to exhaust their malice, and continue to charm your auditors. Discover those treasures of learning heaven seems to have reserved for you. Your enemies, struck with the splendor of your reasoning, will in the end do you justice. How happy should I be could I see all the world as entirely persuaded of your probity as I am. Your learning is allowed by all. Your greatest adversaries confess you are ignorant of nothing the mind of man is capable of knowing. My dear husband, for the last time I use that title, shall I never see you again? Shall I never have the pleasure of embracing you before death? What dost thou say, wretched Eloise? Dost thou know what thou desirest? Couldst thou behold those brilliant eyes without recalling the tender glances which have been so fatal to thee? Couldst thou see that majestic air of Abelard without being jealous of every one who beholds so attractive a man? That mouth cannot be looked upon without desire. In short, no woman can view the person of Abelard without danger. Ask no more, therefore, to see Abelard. If the memory of him has caused thee so much trouble, Eloise, what would not his presence do? What desires will it not excite in thy soul? How will it be possible to keep thy reason at the sight of so lovable a man? I will own to you what makes the greatest pleasure in my retirement. After having passed the day in thinking of you, full of the repressed idea, I give myself up at night to sleep. Then it is that Eloise, who dares not think of you by day, resigns herself with pleasure to see and hear you. How my eyes gloat over you! Sometimes you tell me stories of your secret troubles, and create in me a felt sorrow. Sometimes the rage of our enemies is forgotten, and you press me to you, and I yield to you, and our souls, animated with the same passion, are sensible of the same pleasures. But oh, delightful dreams and tender illusions, how soon do you vanish away! I awake and open my eyes to find no Abelard. I stretch out my arms to embrace him, and he is not there. I cry, and he hears me not. What a fool I am to tell my dreams to you, who are insensible to these pleasures! But do you, Abelard, never see Eloise in your sleep? How does she appear to you? Do you entertain her with the same tender language as formerly, and are you glad or sorry when you awake? Pardon me, Abelard. Pardon a mistaken lover. I must no longer expect from you that vivacity which once marked your every action. No more must I require from you the correspondence of desires. We have bound ourselves to severe austerities, and must follow them at all costs. Let us think of our duties and our rules, and make good use of that necessity which keeps us separate. You, Abelard, will happily finish your course. Your desires and ambitions will be no obstacle to your salvation. But Eloise must weep. She must lament forever, without being certain whether her tears will avail for her salvation. I had liked to have ended my letter without telling you what happened here a few days ago. A young nun, who had been forced to enter the convent without a vocation therefore, is by a stratagem I know nothing of escaped, and fled to England with a gentleman. I have ordered all the house to conceal the matter. Ah, Abelard, if you were near us, these things would not happen, for all the sisters, charmed with seeing and hearing you, would think of nothing but practicing your rules and directions. The young nun had never formed so criminal a design as that of breaking her vows, had you been at our head to exhort us to live in holiness. If your eyes were witnesses of our actions, they would be innocent. When we slipped, you should lift us up and establish us by your counsels. We should march with sure steps in the rough path of virtue. I begin to perceive, Abelard, that I take too much pleasure in writing to you. I ought to burn this letter. It shows that I still feel a deep passion for you, though at the beginning I tried to persuade you to the contrary. I am sensible of waves, both of grace and passion, and by turns yield to each. Have pity, Abelard, on the condition to which you have brought me, and make in some measure my last days as peaceful as my first have been uneasy and disturbed. End of letter 5.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.